Hey, what's up, Nerd Funnelers? This is Bob Shway. You're listening to Nerd Funnel, where we take all the nerd news of the world and funnel it into your more than willing ear holes. With me today is Mars.
What's going on, Nerd Funnelers?
And we are talking today. We're going to be discussing education in nerd culture, like institutions of learning, such as. Well, I was thinking, it's graduation time. A lot of my friends are graduating graduate school or undergrad, or you know, it's time to walk and throw that cap off the air, right? So I was thinking about schooling in nerd culture and the different kinds of institutions and their ideologies, what works and what doesn't, and how they've massively failed their students. And I think we can always find one good example in each. So. I'll start with my favorite, which is Starfleet Academy, the school I've always wanted to go to. Ex astris scientia is their motto, from the stars, knowledge. So we get a lot of glimpses of Starfleet Academy in the show. In the Star Trek Online, you really get to see a lot of Starfleet Academy. Starfleet Academy is a four-year program, I think, that... You train in multiple disciplines. You come out either command, science, or engineering, I believe. It's like the three different tracks, like the red, yellow, blue. So the school there, I think, I mean, if I was going to take a class at school, I think, what major would you have? Which one would you be? A red shirt, a blue shirt, or a yellow shirt?
That's a really interesting question because I've often thought about the same thing myself. You know, you know me, man. It's like I've been a Star Trek fan ever since I've been for as long as I've been breathing.
Yeah.
And I think instinctively, if you ask anyone out there who's been a fan of Star Trek for the last 30 years, from way back, most of them would on instinct probably choose the command track because the command people are always the people who are really who are the ones in vogue, the ones who are cool. Like you see when you think of Star Trek, you think of Kirk's Picard or Janeway, one of the command characters. So the command would definitely be the first one on the horizon. But people who are really around, they might choose one thing that's like engineering or sciences or anything like that. Now, what would I be? That's a really interesting question. And you would have to pass me that one of the 21st century red shirts as for the red shirts from the 23rd century. No, thank you.
Well, the command shirts, the command crew, they're the ones that get the screen time. They get all the attention. But yeah, hey, it's the engineers and the mechanics and the biologists and the people that make the ship work and keep it going.
Yeah, but the thing is, this is my take on it. I mean, even in my personal life, I know the I've always aspired to heroes. I've aspired to people who have leadership skills, who keep their lives organized, who know how to inspire the best in people, and individuals who are more who are Renaissance men and women. Like for example, you see Picard, who's an avid archaeologist. You see Janeway, who's a scientist. You see, I'm not sure what field Sisko was more into. I think he was more into archaeology himself. But
I think he was a diplomat. He got into archaeology
something
once
like
he got
that.
To
yeah,
Bajor.
But anyway, you see these command folks who are arguably people who are, definitely leaders, but. Their diverse backgrounds allow them to serve as ambassadors and people who can interact with a variety of different cultures and societies, which is arguably a big thing in the Star Trek universe because they have diverse species and cultures as part of their crew, and they have to interact with a variety of unknown life and societies out there. So, you know, well, it's cool. Specialized. It's cool to really get into the science and the medical fields and the engineering. There's something very, very appealing about just also going out there and understanding culture and history and being able to use that to, as the saying goes, to boldly go where no one has gone before and to seek out new life and new civilizations.
You know, one of the best parts about Starfleet Academy is if you can get in, it's free.
Yeah.
no tuition in, on Earth in the 23rd, 24th centuries.
The 24th century is like an idea. The 23rd and 24th century is the start of the Federation. It's kind of like an idealized communistic society.
Yeah.
Well, not the shit that we see out there today, but the hope. It's always been my hope that, like, you know, in reality, we can actually make a federation.
Eventually.
Yeah, you know, hopefully.
But this is the thing. So it's an idealistic society, but it still doesn't preclude the students from getting into shenanigans. If you recall, Wesley Crusher was in a massive cover-up of... Do you remember that storyline where Wesley was piloting a bunch of ships with some other students and... They were in an accident.
They tried to cover it up. I remember that.
And so he got like held back. So and then there was also the you remember Red Squad in DS9. Remember Red Squad, the kind of rogue cadets that
kind of
went out.
They were a cult. Yeah. And then there's Tom Paris's example. There's multiple examples of people who went to Starfleet and were flunkies. I think like even Worf's human brother. He went to
Kern.
Academy
yeah,
for a
he
while.
Flunked out.
It wasn't Kern. It was he was his human brother, like Nikolai.
Oh, Nikolai. Yeah.
And like he didn't flunk out, but he hated it. He hated the academy and decided to get out of there. I think the topic was, you know, how do these institutions fail their students? Well, the thing is, I don't necessarily consider that failure because, like, you know, even in the far off future, like, people still have some kind of personal issues, and, like, you know, you still have, like, you have young people going through that school, and they're going to make these foolhardy decisions sometimes that teach them about life. But if we're going to go back to the idea of failure, I still think there's something valid to that point, but not necessarily from the cadet's point of view. And I want to bring Deep Space Nine in as an example.
Mm-hmm.
Federation is an idealistic utopia, more or less. Not that there are any problems, but it's one hell of a lot better than what we have today. And like it was Gene Roddenberry's view of an optimistic future.
Mm-hmm.
Deep Space Nine really pushed the limits of that. You see Sisko making underhanded deals to get the Romulans into the war. You see questionable decisions being made on the far on the outer edge of the Federation. You see these Starfleet captains who are ideally these paragons of what it means to be human, making very, very morally questionable decisions that you really have to ask, did the Academy actually prepare you for that? Because the Academy prepared you to live the ideals of Starfleet.
Exactly.
But like when you're dealing with threats like the Borg or the Dominion or the Undine or the Species 8472 as they're known in the mainstream Star Trek canon. Does their Starfleet training really prepare them for that? Are they really prepared to say, okay, how far do we go to defend the ideals of the Federation? And I would say, in a lot of ways, probably not. There are even examples that in the alternate universe. You see Admiral Marcus build the Vengeance. You see him call up Section 31 to fight the Klingons.
Yeah.
You see, him. Holding Khan's crew hostage to get him to build technology and weapons that can be used against potential threats. And, like, you know, there's a Federation and an idealistic society that teaches you how to live these ideals. But you also realize that it's not a cut and dry, light and dark universe out there. There's definitely an undercurrent of moral... moral ambiguity that has to be dealt with, and the Federation is not perfect.
A lot of those captains have to make hard decisions, though. Like, they're out on the frontier. Like, they're training. Like, the best they have is the Kobayashi Maru, the no win scenario, right? But still, there's pretty clear cut. It's like, you know, I have to decide one way or the other. But there's a lot of these situations that they're in out there where there's no real right answer. I mean, take, for instance, you know, in The Pale Moonlight with Sisko, like, he was it the right thing to do to con the Romulans into joining the war and taking the lives and doing the nefarious things that he had to do? Probably not. But in the end, did it save a bunch of lives? Hell yeah. So it's like the lesser of two evils. And I don't think Starfleet prepares people for that because they exist in that bubble. And that's the thing, a lot of things that people talk about with institutions of higher learning. Like, it's the ivory tower. It's your removed from the world, right? You're kind of isolated in this intellectual, you know, paradise and this kind of idealistic society, like a mini society, right?
That's what I think. You can really, you could they could probably do an episode on Star Trek about that, like about the Academy and how and how they and you know how they function within the bubble as opposed to the fringes of the Federation, because that the Starfleet, the Federation is idyllic, but like you have a civilization in which your ideals work. When you're in an environment in which you don't have the trappings of civilization, you don't have people who have evolved sensibilities like yourself, it falls apart. And your morals, your ideas don't. There's nothing. You never have anything challenge them. And that you can draw a parallel to which is happening in college universities today with the threatening people with alternative challenging and extremely controversial points of view, and people just want to stay in their own bubbles and shut people down with violence to prevent their views from being challenged, and as a result you don't grow.
Totally.
And that's scary because it's real life now. And it's kind of disconcerting to realize, it is a fictional universe, but in the 24th century, that occurs to some degree. And I wonder if Gene Roddenberry were still alive, would we have explored these areas? Because he viewed the Federation as he viewed it as utopia. I'm beating a dead horse here, but getting him to sign off on certain scripts was almost impossible because he kept saying, "Nope, humans aren't like that anymore. Humans aren't like that anymore." Well, apparently they still are, and since Star Trek is in many ways a mirror for us to look at ourselves, in the future, are we going to be mature enough as a people to step out of that bubble, to really question our beliefs and like to really continue to grow? And does an institution of learning really can an institution of learning really teach that?
Well, I think the Starfleet Academy attempts to, but because so much of it takes place on Earth, even though there's lots of different races there, the overall ideology of the Federation has isolated it from the hard decisions that these other people have to make when they're on the front lines. Like, there are plenty of instances in Next Generation where you had admirals making bad decisions, questionable decisions. You had that one episode where Riker's old captain, who's now an admiral, is looking for the phase cloak.
Oh yeah,
and then he's trying to cover up the fact that it even existed because he wants an edge over the Romulans, and it's a clandestine military development project. And then Riker, of course, as the bastion of Federation ideals and peacekeeping, decides, no, you're wrong, we have to reveal this. Even though before, when he was first out of the Academy, and he keeps referencing the Academy, he's like, I was fresh with words like duty and honor and loyalty. So he, when there was a mutiny aboard his old captain's ship, he's the one that picked up the phaser and stood by and defended his captain, even though his captain was probably in the wrong. So this is more ambiguous because now Riker's on the other side, but he's got to, now he's like, well, I'm not going to stand by you this time because you were wrong. And I see that now because I've been out away from the Federation. I know what real duty and real honor is, and what were the higher ideals we're striving towards.
Being young, again, the example of being young and idyllic and starry-eyed and not really having the experience out there to see, okay, you got these words, like these buzzwords like duty, honor, loyalty, compassion, but unless you've been in a situation where you really had to experience them, those are just words.
Exactly, right.
Those are just words.
You need to put the experience behind the ideals for it to make more sense and to act.
Right.
To act to the what you're really trying to get at.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you can be like Picard and just mouth off against a Nox can and get stabbed in a bar.
Picard, he is probably the several of these captains are just like, they always represent the ideal, and Captain Picard, to me is probably the at the apex of all the captains they have because of his, his ambassador like qualities, his deep knowledge of culture and of people and whatnot. I think you've heard me mention this before. Like I like to often compare Picard to another famous commander from sci-fi culture who, Admiral William Adama from Battlestar Galactica. And which is not an idyllic universe. It's a very, very dark one. And if we threw Picard in that universe, I liken William Adama as being a dark version of Picard, still an incredibly honorable individual, but also someone who's more ideologically blinded and you know, still honorable in the most fundamental ways, but not quite as refined.
Well, and it's interesting you bring up Adama because they tried to do that Blood and Chrome series,
yeah,
where it was young Adama fresh out of the academy, and he was a lot more reckless. And there was a bunch of web episodes that came out. They originally wanted it to be a series, and it didn't take. But two different looks at young and old Adama, how they differed, and a lot of his thing was like, "Oh, I'm just fresh out of the academy. I'm just fresh out of the academy." But yeah, you need that experience to kind of really clarify what the ideals that you are told you are supposed to uphold as a youngster really actually mean. Do you remember the episode of Next Generation where Chief O'Brien's old captain is going after the Cardassians as part of like the precursor to the Maquis?
Yeah, he was the guy who suspected the Cardassians were up to something, and it turns out he was right.
Yeah, but it wasn't the right way to go about it.
It wasn't it wasn't the right way to go about it. Like, but the I don't know. It's we're never told anything about the bureaucracies of the Federation at the time, so it kind of makes you wonder if there was more to it than that. It goes to show you can be taught whatever you want in school, but it's not until you actually get in the world and have your ideas gets bounced around and knocked around a little bit that you actually start to apply them. Speaking of which, they released a few pictures of Star Trek Discovery recently.
Oh yeah, when was that?
Just this morning on Facebook.
Oh cool, I gotta take a look.
Michelle Yeoh is one of the captains, and
how's it look?
It looks interesting. It looks like. I don't remember the photograph entirely. It shows Michelle Yeoh along with her first officer, I think, and they're on a planet somewhere. So it looks like some kind of desert environment. I'm not sure, barren.
I'll take a look when I get home.
It's interesting. I'm very excited for that series. I want to see where they're taking Star Trek.
Me too. So as far as a very high idealistic and moral ideology, as far as a school goes, one place where a school is steeped in the muck and mire of the galaxy is the Jedi Order. The Jedi Temple is centered on Coruscant, and they are right smack dab in the middle of the city. They're not really isolated from anybody, but they still have this high moral upbringing. They go on missions. The masters take the Padawans out to do the bidding of the Jedi Order. So they're very in the world very early on, I believe. And of course, I feel like their order is almost more religious than anything else, which of course affects how they see the world. And it's not so much of course they have an education there. Younglings are, you know, taught in school, but with a very, it's almost like a Catholic school, I would kind of want to say.
Well, they're isolated from the outside world because I don't think Padawans are allowed to have outside contact. They're not allowed to have, they're not allowed to marry. It's a very, very monastic, society. Yeah, the Jedi Order is definitely some kind of, it's definitely has religious overtones and whatnot, and like there's even a Church of the Force in the Star Wars universe that mm-hmm. that's in vogue in The Force Awakens, and you see the Guardians of the Wills in Rogue One, and you see these Jedi who are taught the values of the light side, and you see the Sith who are their counterparts are taught the values of the dark side. It's really interesting because the gray aspects of the Force are never really explored in the films. George Lucas, he wanted the central to the theme of his story, of his overall story was the idea of light versus dark, good versus evil.
But are they isolated to that light side in the Jedi Order? Or do you think they get a taste of it coming out? Like as far as like the actual place, like the temple, like you know where Yoda instructs the younglings, and that's where they bring everybody to get tested. I mean, they get tested to come in. They have to pass like the midichlorian test or whatever, unless they retcon that. But remember, they were saying like, oh, if he'd been in the Republic, he would have been identified early. So they like proactively go out and seek students, right? They're looking for these people.
They're looking for students because they want them to train at a very, very young age, so they don't follow the dark side of the Force, and like they don't have certain experiences in life that like make them more prone to be coming dark.
See,
dark
but already
Jedi or whatnot. So
already it's a thing of salvation. It's like, well, it's almost like it's a religious school. It's like we're saving you from a horrible existence by bringing you in here. We're it's like a salvation type thing.
I don't necessarily think it's a salvation type thing. It's just like they're looking for more knights, and they want to be able to train. They're effectively training a superhuman, and they want to be able to train this kind of superhuman in a way that can in a way so that he or she can use his or her powers responsibly. And ideally, the way you do that is to take someone who's pretty much more or less a blank slate and bring them up in a series of strictures and ideals that allow them to function from a very strict moral structure. Now, they don't want to wait too long until a kid's too old or experienced certain things in his life, because if you take an abused kid and bring him into a school, he's going to have some serious emotional shit to deal with that that someone else may not have originally, and that's definitely going to shape his or her life, which is, yeah.
There's a lot of corollaries to Professor Xavier's school, bringing in damaged children, training them to use their power.
I don't think there are any corollaries.
You don't think so?
It's really different, because like the Jedi Order is very strict about making very, very strict rules and having very, very few exceptions with devastating consequences sometimes, as Anakin. We saw in Anakin Skywalker. But Xavier's school is more like he allowed anyone, and it wasn't about letting in. They weren't necessarily training warriors. Only a few kids were chosen to become could become X-Men. The idea was to take them in, teach them how to train their powers, use them responsibly, and give them maybe a home, a family, people who can understand them. Things that are fundamental to not just the lives of children, but to the lives of everyone: love, understanding, and mentorship.
And you don't think that was not a part of the Jedi Order, like?
No, I don't think that was a part of the Jedi Order, because you didn't see them taking in 9, 10-year-old or even teenage people who had experiences through life, because they felt they were too worldly, they felt they were too they couldn't learn the ways of the Jedi to stay pure. And
that's why I think they're kind of like a religious category. It's like it's very kind of elitist.
I don't want to say it's elitist. I think it's a way for the Jedi to say, like, you know, we have to be very, very morally responsible here, because throughout their history, with how finically how in that universe, like they're more attuned, I guess, to good or evil, there's more of a potential for misusing their powers, and because there's a schism between Jedi and Sith, they're very strict about who gets to learn how to use their powers and who doesn't, and to avoid them.
But doesn't making that distinction piss off people that don't get to use them and then drive them more towards the Sith?
Depends on, in the era of the Sith, maybe, but I want to say it wouldn't necessarily pisses them off. Like they're really not much of a threat unless they really learn how to use their powers. Mm-hmm. And so should just anyone be allowed to? Here's the thing. We're outside there. I've been involved in martial arts for a large part of my life. And do I really want to go around teaching people certain techniques and skills? Number one, not everyone needs them. And number two, if I see some kid out there who wants to learn some of the stuff to fight and to bully people, man, I'm not going to teach them that. It's just going to make them more angry. It's going to make them worse. Or whatever, and they're not Jedi. They don't have powers like Force chokes, or they can throw Force lightning or anything like that. I might show them some things, but I'd also like to try to impart some philosophy on them. To help them make them better people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
well, you know what's interesting about the Jedi these schools we're talking about, the Professor Xavier School, Starfleet Academy, is that after you're done, you're pretty much assured a job, which is pretty cool. That's some nice benefits to all these. Is like if you're done at the Starfleet Academy, you get assigned. You're in, right? And then if you're in the Jedi, you got one job, Jedi. And then if you're in I think the only part is that the Professor Xavier School, like once you graduate, you're kind of on your own. They kind of turn you loose. There's only so much room in that mansion.
Well, it's a university. It's not supposed to be. It's not an academy or anything like that. I'm not sure. They never really discussed that in the comics. It's not from what I know. It's some mutants go on to become X-Men. Some don't.
Yeah. Again, I think it's also free. I think Professor Xavier's estate pays for all that stuff, right? Because he's super rich.
I don't know. I don't really follow X-Men.
I've never seen them asking Jubilee for money. I don't see Nightcrawler taking out loans.
I don't know anything about
what about Hogwarts, Harry Potter.
Hogwarts is just the, I don't know. I've never really followed that aspect of Harry Potter too deeply because, you know, I enjoy the Harry Potter series, but with all due respect to J.K. Rowling's crew and everything like that, the Harry Potter, like, you know, Hogwarts and several aspects of that universe, I kind of felt like it was always somewhat a little cute, somewhat kiddish, and
it's a children's book.
It's a children's story, but I said that not as a diss or anything like that. I love the Harry Potter series and the story. It's great stuff, but you know, do I really look at Hogwarts as an analog to the Jedi Temple or the Xavier School or even Starfleet Academy? No, and like, you know, they're teaching their kids how to become wizards, but like it's more like a kids school and they're learning and they're talking about you know, teaching them curriculum. It's like a school where, like, you know, kids are just, it's like a high school or something like that, and the people, they're learning how to be wizards, but, like, you know, they're not really mentoring them to be warriors or protectors or anything like that. Just teaching them how to be wizards. It's just a school for learning for a coming of age. It's not really like an academy, so to speak, for for any kind of monastic order or extreme or level of service. It's just another school. It's kind of another school. You kind of know what I'm saying. It's not really like, you're not teaching people to become Jedi. You're not being able to become like warriors.
Well, isn't wizard in itself a grand enough title?
Well, you have orrs. You have people who are going into like husbandry plants like Neville Longbottom. I'm not sure what he did.
It's kind of like an Ivy League like finishing school.
That's pretty much what it is. It's just a school, you know. And you do see the kids grow up and learn from there, but they learn from a teacher as more like an older brother, father, mother kind of model. It's not really a religious or spiritual order, or like an academy for teaching you how to live up to ideals in a certain universe, or learning how to serve in the 24th 23rd century's version of a military. So it's very different. It's very, very civilian and not as ideologically driven. And which is something I see Starfleet and the Jedi Order being, like, you know.
So would you say Hogwarts is the most secular?
I think secular is a little too strong a word, but I think it's more pedestrian.
Okay. Okay. Wow. What, are there any other schools in nerd culture that you can think of that you find interesting?
No, not a school specifically. But since we're talking about schools, we're also talking about education. I'd like to take this for a little bit of interesting spin. You see these heroes, you see these people, and we admire throughout all these like big series, like going through schools and whatnot. What about the heroes who go through learning from life itself, and, like, you know, analogies I could draw for, examples I could pull out would include like Batman and the Green Arrow. You know,
they had teachers.
I'm not saying they didn't have teachers. I'm saying they didn't necessarily spend a substantial amount of time at a center of learning.
It's like homeschool.
You see Batman going out there, traveling the world, learning specific skills from specific people. And yeah, the comic book Bruce Wayne did spend some time at university learning criminology and everything like that. And like he brought all the skills together to learn how to become Batman. And his worldview is shaped by the people he met. You see Oliver Queen, especially in the very, very well done CW series, in which he gets turned into a vigilante and an incredibly honorable disciplined warrior through his experiences with Slade Wilson, with Argus, with Talia al Ghul. Yet these individuals who learn from life and some very, very harsh experiences, and those things really mold you into somebody. And you see examples of people out there today who made their fortunes, who made their way through life, who didn't really go to formal institutions of learning. And like, I kind of see these people in these other like fictional universes as allegories to that.
Well, there's definitely two ways to go. You can be independent study and homeschooled, or you can, you know, just attend an academy. Who's to say which one's better? People turn out just as well either way. Somebody that never even like go to a college or university that are, you know, high school graduates or dropouts that turn around and make something of themselves by doing exactly what you were just talking about.
Yep. By Batman, you know, Oliver Queen, Green Arrow, and the, you know, would be examples of the latter.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for discussing this with me. It's been kind of a burning question for me. So until next time, you've been nerd funneled.
You've been nerd funneled.